Hello, and welcome to a special mini-series of Honestly, recorded during COVID-19. Like everyone, I've found the whole experience to be somewhat of an emotional roller coaster, with the ups and downs sometimes coming on a nearly hourly basis. When pulling together the guests, I was keen to delve into some universal topics that had helped us through lockdown, but that will continue to feel relevant as we move onwards to a post-coronavirus chapter. This series has been made possible by our sponsors PayPal, who came on board at such short notice. For them, the key message is one of kindness, something that is so needed at the moment. One that can, on occasion, be made easier using the PayPal app. Whether it's preparing for a future haircut from your hairdresser friend, popping some dosh towards a takeaway for a pal who is at their wit's end, or, like we did, ordering a bunch of craft stuff from a local art shop who delivered paints and other bits to our front door on a bike. You can show your support and appreciation for someone by sending them money quickly and securely via the PayPal app. And now on to a little bit of housekeeping. We recorded these episodes in the safety of all of our homes during lockdown, so we've been heavily reliant on the mercy of the internet. Also, in the spirit of being honest and to paint a visual for you, my recording studio is actually the corner of my eldest son's bedroom. There is Lego underfoot, there are children wrestling off mic, and I'm sheltering in what can only be described as a fort made of pillows in an attempt to improve the sound quality. You can expect some technical issues as we battle with Wi-Fi strength throughout some of the episodes, but please do stay with us as we promise every episode has something you can take away from it. How do I introduce Laura Belbin? Well, she came bursting onto Instagram with her account at Knee Deep in Life, where she takes a no-holds-barred approach to debunking the contrived realities that have become commonplace on the platform. Although hilarious and frank and often involving very few clothes, her humour has also served as a great way of helping her feel her way out of very challenging times of mental health, which, without meaning to sound cheesy, is exactly what being knee-deep in life is all about. It's about embracing all the feelings in an unedited and unapologetic way. So enough of my rambling, let's get on with the episode. Hi, Laura.
Hello, darling. How are you?
I'm all right. My kids have just left the house after, you know, 3 days of all being together all the time. So I feel, with my husband, I might add, but I feel a little bit of a sigh of relief. How are you doing?
Much the same as you. My husband has literally just taken the kids out and I'm like, bye.
Yeah. It's a lot. Like, yeah. Zero space.
Yeah. It is the fact that you lack the freedom to be able to go, oh, I'm just going to, you know, pop to the shop. Popping to the shop is socially distancing in a queue for 40 minutes before you hardly get through the door.
Yesterday, Ben and I were like, oh, should we have a sit down and a glass of sparkling water for 10 minutes? And that's like, that is it. It's like literally 10 minutes. And in that 10 minutes, they got in the craft cupboard and emptied stuff. There is so little breathing space. And I'm not on board with slagging off my kids. I am saying that parenting is really, really hard sometimes.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the thing that I find really frustrating. And I don't know that it's necessarily this generation. I think that we've always been like it. It was keeping up with the Joneses. It was having the model children. You know, back way back when, it's always been like this real heavy emphasis on making sure you get it right, when in actual fact, it's totally acceptable to hold your hand up sometimes and go, yeah, my kids are really irritating today and I'm not in the mood. I don't want to have to deal with them. And I haven't got the time or energy to cope with whatever it is they're bringing to the table. But we kind of feel like shunned for even admitting that our kids irritate us. And I don't partake in that. Like, I hold my hands up quite happily and say, I'm not in the mood to be a mum today. And actually, that's totally okay. Like, that doesn't make me a bad mother. It just makes me a human being.
Families aren't meant to be together 24/7.
No. And I think when you have those moments where you're feeling suffocated, you almost feel like a bad person for holding your hand up and going, I've had enough now. Because you feel like you're meant to be that person that's saying, hey, this is fun. You know, let's bake cakes together and let's not care about the fact that you're putting it all over the side and none of it's going in the container. Like, that's stressful.
It is stressful. It is stressful. And the thing is, yeah, I mean, I think we both, I was going to do a quick fire round with you, but I'm going to go straight in. I think we both come from the same place. The dangerous thing is when you add that layer on top of it, isn't it? Where you then add the guilt on top of the feeling frustrated. Yeah. As soon as you can go, I mean, that's exactly why I came onto social media, because I couldn't find anyone who'd just say, this is obviously a gift, being a parent, of course it is, yeah. But it's also the hardest thing you will ever do. And that is all right.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no shame in having those days where you go, I don't want to do this. And yet you do. It's that guilt is just so heavy. You instantly go, I've had enough. Yeah. I need a break. And then as soon as you have the break, you're like, oh my God. No other mum is ever doing this. I am the only mother on the planet right now that has said she's had enough of her kids. And it's not. It's all of us. It's just, I think, a lot of women, and I get why, they're petrified of holding their hands up and going, oh, yeah, I'm one of those mums, because they don't want to then be judged as the bad mum for saying I've had enough, you know?
No,
cycle.
Yeah, it really is. And then you've just got to find your crew, haven't you? You've got to find the people that you can be really honest with, and that does take quite a while. That's why that first couple of years is so brutal. I think I spent a long time in early motherhood kind of waiting to be told off and waiting for someone to say you're doing this badly, and then once you go, oh no, I am doing this okay. You know, your children get to school and you get one goodish report and you're like, yes, I've kind of raised okay humans. Haven't messed it up completely.
Yeah. You can't love anything as much as you love your kids. And like, you know, I become almost like a lioness. Mm. Like that sort of primal thing that you don't even know is there. And you do love your children so much, like overwhelming. As a mother, to feel that level of responsibility and love and fear and anxiety for this person, like you created this person and then you kind of throw them out there into the big wide world and you go, oh my God, please, A, do not be the kid that, you know, spits in other kids' faces, and also remember your manners and you know, please, above all else, I don't want to get a phone call to say that you have, you know, split some kid's lip in the playground because they wouldn't share their snacks with you or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it's just this, it's never ending. It's honest to God, never ending.
I keep laughing to myself. If on like the 1st of January this year, someone said to us, right, end of March till September, broadly, they're going to be with you all the time, what would we have done?
Yeah, I actually don't know. I think I may have left the country.
I think literally over the hills.
Where would I have gone? Because everybody's in the same boat right now. So
that's it, isn't it? That's it. There's nowhere, like, you can't really pull on a support network because everybody, that is the thing about this. It's really, you've got to kind of get through it on your own.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's probably why some people have struggled so much, because you can't just go, oh, I've had enough, I'm going to go see my mate. You're like, okay, no. Yeah, I've had enough. So I'm going to sit in the same room that I've had enough in for the last 5 weeks and stare at the wall, because it's either that or, you know, choosing to do arts and crafts with my children, which, to be quite honest with you, I'd much rather headbutt a wall. So, you know, isolation is very isolating, it turns out. Who knew?
Who knew? Who knew? But it's going to get better.
Yeah. And, you know, like from our point of view, we've made decisions about our children and about when they'll go back to school or preschool that other people might not necessarily agree with. And, you know, I mean, I feel slightly mad for the fact that I said my youngest, who's 4, technically he could go back to preschool on the 1st of June and we're choosing to not send him. And there is a part of me that's like, am I gotten for punishment? Because I've just chosen to keep my child at home for longer so that he can effectively, you know, like drop kick his brother at every given opportunity and make any form of education for his brother twice as more complicated. But it's just a decision that we've kind of gone with and said, yeah, this is right for us right now.
But isn't that really, I think there's something, as you say, really important about that. Like, we don't all have to agree with each other. You can only base it on your, and there isn't very, I really think there isn't very much of that now. And
no.
And yeah, and actually it's a really good metaphor for parenting, isn't it? Do yeah. what you feel is right for your child and your yeah. house, and like where your mental health is versus the virus itself, and everyone just get on with it. Like we've got to remove all the judgment, because you do send yourself mad. I've seen myself do it, you know. We're in Peckham, and I've been to the big park, and I at one point was going around scowling at everybody, but actually you don't know why they're there. Like, they could be in crisis. Most people are trying to abide by the rules, and all that does is ruin our time out with me being yeah. angry at the general population.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the thing I've got you on here to talk about is humour.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm such a depressing person.
And for me, this is always like the ultimate fear, because whenever I've been on the Scummy Mummies podcast a couple of times, and like instantly any kind of sense of humour I have disappears, and I become this really worthy person. I'm like, who are you? And then I listen to Ramesh Ranganathan, who I am a massive fangirl of, on Adam Buxton's podcast, and he was saying the first time he went on Have I Got News For You, Ian Hislop came into his dressing room beforehand and said, if I can give you one piece of advice, speak pretty soon, because otherwise that silence will build. Yeah. And yeah. he said, I got to like 20 minutes into the show and I literally hadn't said a single funny thing, and then the first thing I said was not funny at all. Can you imagine being booked like, in that situation? It's been like, I've got nothing.
Yeah, you know what? Because I was on Good Morning Britain back in December for a debate, and it's the first time that I've ever been on live TV before. And there are no words to describe how petrified I was. If someone actually said to me, what's your name? I would have been like, I don't know. Absolutely terrified. And I went out there and I sat down on the chair and literally, you know, waiting for the lights to come up. And it wasn't until they said, welcome back, that I was like, okay, Laura, you can do this. You know, you're like, how can you have blacked out for that long? I was like, geez. It was the most terrifying thing of my life. Yeah. So I totally relate to that feeling. Yeah. I get it.
It's the worst. It's the worst.
Yeah, it is. It is the worst. And I think from my point of view with regards to social media, I come from, and maybe quite similar to you, that you know, the whole reason why you started your blog is because you wanted to give that level of reality. And I think that it normally shocks people that I started Knee Deep in Life off the back of really severe mental health issues. I think people are a bit like, oh, okay, I didn't expect that, because you're funny. And it's like, but that's why, because when I had my son, who's now 4, and I was so horrifically depressed, I was looking at social media, I think for, I don't know, some type of epiphany to say it was going to be all right. And I don't blame these people, but the my friends, even influencers, I was looking to them for some glimmer of, yeah, actually we're in it too. And actual social media is like the worst place to look for that, because it's very difficult to find that reality. And I started Knee Deep in Life as I was getting better. You know, I was still heavily medicated, and I thought, oh, you know what, nobody can be any worse to me than I've already been to myself. And I started out very carefully, because I always worried about, you know, my father-in-law seeing it or reading it or judging me. And then I got to a point where I was like, you know what? Screw it. No, this is me. This is who I am. I'm not ashamed of how I look, and I'm going to talk about it. But mostly I want to make people laugh, because it was the one thing that I lost in amongst my depression, was that I didn't laugh at anything anymore. I didn't find anything funny. I just want to be able to give a small little splice of fun, of reality, of lightheartedness, to be able to make you laugh. Because if I can do that, then I've more than done my job. So that's my passion, really, while also being so openly honest about, you know, my own reality. I've learned to care less about what other people are thinking. And I know that's a one thing that people really can struggle with. We all have body parts, and it's totally okay to accept the fact they don't look like we thought they were going to look, or we're not behaving the way that we thought we were going to behave. And it's totally acceptable to just kind of let it go and say, yeah, I've not shaved my armpits in 5 weeks, and I don't always want to have sex with my husband. You know, like, why have we got to shy away from that reality? It's not a shameful thing at all. It's reality, and I don't want to be embarrassed by that.
It's so interesting what you say, because I was going to get onto the mental health thing, but definitely I relate to that if when you are in the depths of a bad bit of mental health and you do manage to laugh, that really is so worth clinging on to, isn't it? Mm. I was craving that reality check on social media, definitely. But then actually what I've learned a few years down the line, for some people, they're creating the really very editorial content is a form of therapy in a different way. And I think we've just got to get to a point where people understand that they are, that is a front, and that's absolutely fine, because it is, yeah, it's interesting.
There's those mums that float through life, you know, they like to bake, they like arts and crafts, they keep the house tidy and they're just on it. But in actual fact, even if you are that mum, that's okay. Like, it's actually, it's totally okay to be whoever it is you want to be, because I never want to look like that person who's then shaming the woman who chooses to do that, because I really do have such a strong belief in knowing that some people really do need to have, like you say, the sort of very filtered, perfect, beautiful, laid out photos for their own mental health. And who are we to judge them for that? Like, crack on, sweetheart. If that's going to make you happy, then you are no different than me, who is showing the extreme uglier version of what life can be. And like, that's totally okay. And the reason why people flock to different accounts, different bloggers or influencers, whatever you want to call it. I hate the word influencer, it's vile. It just makes me wretch. But whoever they flock to, it's because they're getting something out of it.
Yeah.
And who are we to sit and judge them for what they find entertaining? Because I follow so many different people on Instagram who bring so many different things to the table. I love Sophie Hinch. As somebody who doesn't keep a very clean house, it's also totally acceptable for me to watch her stuff and enjoy it. And I may get a couple of pointers from her of how to make my house look less like a crack den, but generally speaking, I am enjoying so many different people for so many different reasons. You know, whether it be that they're helping with your mental health, or they're making you laugh, or they're making you think harder about yourself or your self-acceptance or your body, then it can be such a powerful tool, because it's enriching your life for the better and not dragging you down to believe that you're not good enough because, you know, you're not keeping up to the standards of whoever it is you might be following.
And also there's an element of being responsible for yourself. Like, we all know, I've just had Instagram off my phone for the weekend because I was just in a bit of a shitty place at the end of last week, and I was just like, I need to just ground myself again, and it's no big deal, it's just I just needed a break. That's not the fault of anybody I'm following that it was feeling shitty. It's feeling shitty because my head was in a bit of a bad place. So you've got to get off it.
But I think that's a really important thing to also admit, like the fact that you're able to say, you know what, I need a break, and I'm going to take a break, and it's going to be for me. I think it's the being for you that is really important, because especially when it becomes your thing. And I think this whole knee deep in life started for me as therapy, and it continues to be therapy because I love what I do. But when lockdown initially happened, there was an element of me like, oh my God, nobody would have seen that panic, because I saw so many people coming to me saying, I really need more videos. Nobody would look at me and see that insecure person at the beginning of lockdown thinking, oh my God, I need to come up with more content. And then like, I kind of sat back a little bit and went, no, Laura, you're doing enough. Like, you're all right where you are. You don't have to try and be more than who you are. You've also got kids at home that you're homeschooling. You know, give yourself a break, because everyone will still be there. No one's going to hate you if you post less.
And also, it's the analogy of when you used to come back from holiday and play your answer machine messages, and then there were none. And it's like, I've had two or three days off Instagram, and you come back on, you're like, oh, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Maybe a couple of people noticed, or maybe
I also think that's the thing with social media that I've tried my absolute best to be more aware of, is when people are quieter, that you just kind of check, especially right now. And I have done quite a few people that I've become really good friends with through social media. I'm going, okay, I'm sensing something on your stories and it doesn't feel right. I'm just going to pop a message.
Just checking in. Yeah, it's such an important thing, isn't it?
Hi, I just wanted to take a moment to mention the initiative from our sponsor, PayPal, who recognised how difficult it is for small businesses in the current climate, which is why they've launched their PayPal It Forward campaign, giving people the chance to shout out their local heroes in the community. I don't know about you, but a sense of community really is one of the best things to have come out of this whole lockdown experience.
So I always do a bit where I ask Instagram about a given topic. So I ask them about humour, which is quite interesting, I think, to ask people about humour when we're in the middle of this situation. But I asked people if they thought that they were funny, and only 62% said they were. And I was like, wow, I amuse myself. And I think, like, even though my mind can be quite dark at times, I'm very grateful to find myself funny. Can you imagine, like, not amusing yourself at all?
Yeah, and I think that's probably my biggest issue, though, Clemmy, is that probably 90% of my life has been spent me laughing at my own jokes. And then there being like this massive sort of tumbleweed moment where it's like, oh, yeah, no one else found that funny. I definitely have been permanently in a state of shock that people find me funny, mainly because I've been so used to normally getting that look, you know, like the wide-eyed look of who invited her, like, seriously, she's weird. I'll do a picture or I'll do a video and I'll look back and I think, okay, so my whole ass is out in that video. There is a strong chance I'm going to post that and it's going to be a tumbleweed moment where people are like, what the fuck have I just seen? There are definitely moments where I struggle to believe that people find me funny.
Well, there's a few things where definitely I can relate to that. Sometimes the stuff, like, I'm like, God, is this weird? I'm going to post it. And nearly always those ones that make you feel are the ones that get traction. And I guess that's why we've both been attracted to it, because this is therapy, right? You're like, all the stuff that I thought was A, in my head, B, weird, C, not funny, or other people has told me wasn't funny. Thank goodness there are people who don't think it's weird, or do think it's weird, and they're weird too.
Weird is a side effect of awesome. That's kind of what I live by now. It's okay to be you, because even if you are a little bit weird, or even if only four people get your sense of humour, those four people are your people.
Yeah.
Why do you want to surround yourself with people that don't get it but laugh because they feel they have to? I don't want to be surrounded by people like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, authenticity is a horrible overused word, but the actual reality of that is it's like you've got to do it for yourself, and you've got to do it for no other reason.
Yeah.
I also asked Instagram whether they thought people were born funny or whether it was learned, and 59% thought it was born. What do you think? First of all, are your kids funny, would you say?
Yeah, my kids, they are. My older son is definitely displaying signs of having a fantastic sense of humour, and he really does make me belly laugh. But I don't know that you're born with it. I definitely feel like there is an element of it that is learnt, because you get a positive reaction, so you do it more. Mm. And I think that that's more of a trial and error thing. Like, I've always wanted to make people laugh. You know, I would be the kid in drama that would do like the really stupid faces and like really throw herself into it. And I can't say now as an adult looking back that was because I was really into drama. It was actually because I just wanted to make people laugh. And I liked the reaction that I got when they'd laugh at me. I mean, often it was never with me. It was normally at me. And I don't know that I was born with that. I think it was more because of the reactions I got.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then I asked if people thought it was a coping strategy, and 79% said that they thought it was. But that is often thrown around as kind of an insult. But as we were saying before, if finding laughter in dark situations saves you, that is, in my mind, only a good thing.
Definitely. I don't think it's a negative thing. I can see where the negativity comes from, because if you've got someone who is deeply, deeply unhappy, but they still feel that need to make others laugh and put themselves last, that is where the negativity kind of lays, because it is such a toxic way to live your life, of being dependent on your own happiness based on someone else's happiness, effectively.
Yes. But what I was going to ask you is, and actually this came up from my audience, do you think that it becomes exhausting to be labelled as funny, and that you're unable to shift out of that role once you are the comedian within a group?
Yeah, I mean, as I said to you earlier about that sort of high expectation I put on myself at the beginning of lockdown, to be like, oh, I need to come up with more content, I need to try and be funnier because people really need me to be, and feeling really overwhelmed by that. You know, whoever I am around, whether that be on social media, whether that be my friends, I don't feel a level of pressure. But then there are times where, because I'm on social media now and because of the following that I've got, there is sometimes a level of pressure to think, right, I've got to try and perform now because I don't want to let them down. And I think in those moments, I have to kind of take a step back and go, hang on a minute, Laura, and not putting that extreme pressure on myself to try and be that person. And it just kind of flow, I guess.
Have you ever injured yourself or Steve during the process of creating these?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, yeah. So Steve's got a partial slip disc now. It's really bad. It's bad. Yeah, that's me. So how, it's awful, isn't it? So we used to do exercise videos and I can't do them anymore because of his back. Yeah. So it was funny because it wasn't funny at all. But when his back first went, we were on holiday and it kind of went and he was like, oh, it's sciatic, I'll be all right. But I've never seen him like it in my life. It was really awful. And I called the chiropractor that's local to us and I said, right, his back is gone and it's like, I don't know what to do. And they said, right, try and get him down to us. So I just about got him in the car. And when he went in for his appointment and they do like this whole assessment thing, and he had fallen down the stairs a couple of years previously, she said, that will be why your back's gone. And she didn't know who I was. And then a little while later, she figured out who I was and she'd watched my videos. And she said to Steve, I do believe that maybe some of your back problems may stem from the fact that you and your wife do exercise videos. It's almost 100% confirmed that Steve's back is permanently fucked because I have swung off of it like a tree. I got stuck on the back of the door once upside down. That wasn't great. And then when he tried to get me down, I don't know, I felt like I was in the scene out of the Matrix because I started walking up onto the wall and onto the ceiling. Like my shoulders were on his shoulders and he was just shouting, what the fuck are you doing? It was awful.
Obviously, he's, I imagine, really proud of you and the journey that you've been on, but he has found himself living quite a strange life in some ways, hasn't he?
He has. And I think without being soppy, that's what I love most about him is that he isn't like me. He's quite a quiet guy. He isn't that person that is very loud and bubbly and chatty and likes to make a complete penis out of himself. He's not like that, whereas I am. And yet the one thing that I've loved so much about him in this process is how incredibly protective he's become of me. And I know that through what he has openly said to me. The day that I launched the fact that I was releasing a book and he sent me some flowers, which he doesn't do often. Ugh. And he just put in the note, Laura, I can't tell you how proud I am of you. And he said a little while ago, he said, you know, it was only a few years ago that I genuinely thought you were going to kill yourself. And he's had a couple of occasions like that in our relationship, I think has been a massive relief and just like overall chuffed the bloody nuts, really, that I've survived. And obviously gone to do the most extreme alternative of showing that she's quite happy with herself and where she is in life.
Oh, that's so nice to hear though, isn't it? It's like, if you do have a social media presence, they have to be in on the journey with you. Yeah, and definitely. Also they have to be there for the roller coaster. As you say, it's a job and there are really hard bits of it. And ultimately it's an empowered man, I think, that and a confident man that lets his wife kind of go and be what she needs to be, however that looks.
I mean, love him. And I'm an idiot just like any other woman. You know, we aren't perfect and we don't have a perfect relationship because perfect relationships don't exist. But we've gone through hell and back to get to where we are now as a couple. I guess that speaks volumes with how secure we are with each other to do what we do.
I think that is true. You know, the happiest relationships are the ones that are pretty ugly at times.
You know, we were only 17 and 19 when we met, and now, you know, we're this far down the line with kids and a house, and we're doing all right, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's we had the same conversation yesterday, like there's been some pretty tense moments during lockdown, but we have maintained our sense of humor and we're, you know, laughing at the bloody disaster of a house that we live in. And I'm sure you're the same. A recent picture you put up where you're kind of leaning on him what are you doing in it? I mean, there's many, but like, I just, like, you must be crying with laughter sometimes, the pair of you.
Sometimes we are, and sometimes he is as pissed off in the picture as he looks he is, which makes me laugh harder, because he's always like, sometimes I say, can we do this? He'll go, no. And I'd be like, can we do this? No. Okay, all right, sure. But can we do this? And he'll go, for God's sake, Laura, just get it done. And then there are other times where we just laugh.
Funny how life works out and the things you find yourselves doing.
My parents sometimes are like, oh, Laura, you know, could you not upload a nice photo of yourself? I'm like, no, don't think so.
Yeah, today. They must be so torn. On the one hand, they're really proud, but I think it's really difficult. People find it quite hard to know how to process it, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. And my parents are now, they are so, so proud, but it's taken them a minute being like, wow, okay, sure. So you're naked. You're naked all over the internet, and and you're talking about your vagina, and you're talking about sex, and you're talking about stuff that as a parent I never want to hear come out of my kid's mouth. Yeah. But yeah, they're, bless them, they are on board, because I guess they have no other choice but to be.
Is there anything that you've ever regretted posting?
Oh my god, actually, no one's ever asked me that before. I don't think there is. Does that sound cocky?
No, I think even if you did things, even if I look back at content I did before, I might not do it now, but that's the journey without sounding like a dick.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that I've learned what I want to talk about and what I don't want to talk about. If I'm going to talk about something serious, I want it to go with a punchy picture or a punchy video that's funny, again, because of balance. I want people to be able to laugh at the same time as understanding whatever it is I'm trying to get across, if it be about mental health or female empowerment. I wouldn't have got to where I am now. And it could be in 20 years time, I'll look back and go, oh my God, what did I do? Yeah. But I'd like to think I will never do that. I'd like to think I'll be proud of this journey, because it's got me to where I am now. And you only get one shot at life. Why sit back and regret it when you can just embrace it and go, yeah, that was me then and this is me now, you know? I want my boys to grow up and understand body positivity. And just because they're boys, it doesn't mean that they can't learn that from their mother. And I also want them to understand how important it is that women do not look photoshopped. And in actual fact, women's bodies, the cellulite, the rolls of fat, the stretch marks are so beautiful, and she shouldn't be judged for her body. And to understand the fact that it is beautiful and it needs to be recognized as beautiful. And we constantly compare ourselves to these magazine covers where women are so unrealistically sort of posed with airbrush so that there's no cellulite, and it's so toxic to us, because we then go, God, what are we doing wrong? And we're not doing anything wrong.
No, we're just being.
We need to learn to love ourselves. And then that kind of like follows on in a much bigger way, because then the people around you can learn from that too. And that's what I want my boys to learn, without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, congratulations, because although it can be uncomfortable and cause injury on occasion, you are doing something really brilliant. As a kind of wrap-up or headed towards the end, where can people find you, and is there anything that you want to shout about?
As in, where can they find me on social media?
Yeah, not don't give out your address, because people don't...
Okay. Damn it, I was just about to give my mobile number. my blog is Knee Deep in Life. I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook. I'm on TikTok. I'm on TikTok, and I'm permanently banned because of the fact they find me highly inappropriate. So don't bother looking at me on there, because I'm never on there much. And what was the other question?
Anything you want to shout about? Your book? You want to shout about your book?
Yeah, my book, I guess. Yeah, my book comes out on the 20th of August, which is...
Not that long away now.
I am so excited, petrified, and just everything all rolled into one. Like, I just, that's very exciting.
What's the book called?
It's called Knee Deep in Life.
Oh,
so, if you know Knee Deep in Life, then it won't be a difficult one to find. So,
congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Two other questions. This series of the podcast is sponsored by PayPal. And so I've been asking people whether they bought anything random during lockdown.
it's actually quite difficult to categorise how many random things I've actually bought. A swimming pool being one of them, a black garden hose and a pond pump, and I don't even have a pond, some thinning scissors for hair cutting, and I'm not a hairdresser, the equivalent of 4 kilos of sweets. I wish I was joking, kilograms of sweets. Yeah, I've really gone to town.
You're really living the lockdown cliches, really, aren't you?
Oh, I am there. 100% there. Yeah, I really am.
And lastly, going back to the title of the podcast, which is honestly, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, it could be a troll, a celeb, a friend, a younger version of yourself, someone who's dead, who would it be and what would you say?
As much as I have got such a long list of celebrities, influential people like Barack Obama or Michelle Obama, someone like that, I would actually, if I could, I'd go back to 17-year-old me. Mm. She was so horrifically insecure about herself. Oh. And she could have done with a hug from me now, definitely. And you're going to be all right, kid. Keep going. Definitely. I would say that I would put myself at the top of my list. Oh. Because more so than anything, she felt ugly and worthless, and yeah, she deserved a little bit of additional love from somebody that definitely knew she was going to turn out all right in the end.
I reckon she'd be pretty like blown away.
So do I.
It's so mad to think. It makes me really goosebumpy. It's because I'm always an emotional wreck. But I'm going to end on that note because it's a hell of a way to end. I have been Clemmie Telford, and this excellent human has been Laura, aka Knee Deep in Life, and this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Laura, for being here. You've been amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been incredible.
And to everyone out there, please do rate, review and subscribe and tell all your mates about it, because it does brilliant things for the algorithm. Thank you so much.
And that's it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode from our special mini-series of Honestly, pulled together in the strangest of times during the lockdown phase of COVID-19, a period of our lives that really has made us be honest with ourselves about so much. Though the topics have felt particularly pertinent during the pandemic, I hope the learnings stay relevant as we return to a new version of normal. And a special shout out to our series sponsor, PayPal. As a company, they've been at the forefront of digital payments for more than 20 years, allowing anyone with an email address to send and receive payments quickly and securely online or on their phone. Download the app today to send money to those making a difference in your life. And last but not least, I'd love to know your thoughts on the episode. Please do leave a rating or review, or if you want to get in touch, my email address is hello@clemmietelford.com. Thanks very much for listening.